Today on CityCast Chicago. Chicago finally has a plan for an elected school board. What's happening in the 7th Congressional District? And music festival lineups are starting to drop. Here with me to talk about it all is executive producer Simone Alisea. It's Tuesday, March 12th. I'm Jacoby Cochran, and this is What Chicago's Talking About. Good morning, Simone. How you feeling?
I'm all right, Jacoby. How are you?
I'm doing well. One big story we weren't able to get to at the end of last week was this school board map. Mm-hmm. I feel like for the last few months, you and I have dreaded having this conversation because it's been so minute by minute. We've known that an elected school board is coming, but at what pace, how many people are going to get elected. And finally, we have a little bit of clarity. Illinois lawmakers have approved a plan for Chicago voters to elect 10 members of a 21-person school board in November. This is part of a transition to a fully elected school board. All right, Simone, catch us up. How do we get here?
How far back should we go, do you think, Jacoby? I mean, this has been ongoing for...
At least the proposal. Obviously, the effort to move away from just a completely Chicago mayoral-controlled school board has been talked about for some time Daley kind of took over the power in the 90s. Even Brandon Johnson, when he ran, said that he was okay with just getting right to the elected school board, but... You know, then he got some of that mayoral power. He was like, maybe we should sit with this for a bit. Maybe we should see what's possible here.
So here's kind of how this has gone down, right? Since the 90s, as you mentioned, it's been up to the mayor of Chicago to appoint school board members. And it puts the school board essentially under mayoral control, right? This, as Richard M. Daley, the second Daley, opened a lot of charter schools, much to a lot of opposition from folks. And then when you had the 50 school closures under Rahm Emanuel and other neighborhood school closures leading up to that, those sorts of moves really prompted advocates to say, Chicago should have an elected school board, a school board that's accountable to voters.
Because it's clear the mayor has a plan. The school board kind of follows up on that. The two examples you just used in recent memory. But even if you think about Brandon Johnson's term thus far.
Exactly.
I feel like the school board might be one of the places he's got his agenda sort of moved through. The school board just unanimously voted to get rid of their contract with Chicago Police Department. And so a mayoral controlled school board seems like it leads directly to a mayoral agenda being implemented.
Exactly. And advocates have basically said, look, the school board should be accountable to voters. Parents have basically said having an elected school board is a more effective way of having our voices heard to actually enact policy at a district-wide level. And so there has been this ongoing push for an elected school board. Now, it was in 2021 that lawmakers in Springfield actually passed the legislation that said, okay, Chicago, you can move to an elected school board. And it was in that plan that sort of came, the compromise came down that was, okay, it's going to be a phased in transition. And in 2024, you're going to elect half the school board. And then in 2026, you're going to elect the second half. But between 2021 and now, there is...
You remember when we used to talk about 2024, 2026 as these like far off distant
concepts? So far off. Well, and that was a big criticism of the plan at the time. Uh-huh. It was like, oh my God, we have to wait how many years to actually go to these elections? But
and now we're here and they barely have had they ish together to this point.
Exactly. So in that time, lawmakers have been trying to figure out, okay, if we're going to elect 10 of 21, what on earth is that going to look like? What do these districts look like? What does the map look like? How are we going to decide?
Like, which one are mayoral appointees, which one are not? How does that, mm-hmm. what does that look like even just for things you can't legislate for? Like, what does that look like for the hierarchy inside of the school board? We were elected, you were appointed, like these kind of questions.
And there were also questions, there were sort of some ethics questions around who could run, mm-hmm. right? So that's sort of what has been under debate over the past couple of years. And now, just last week, there has been a plan that has been approved by both chambers of the General Assembly. It's now on J.B. Pritzker's desk, the governor's desk. And this is what we know. In November, this November, Chicagoans will vote on 10 of 21 school board members. The map is going to look like a map that folks might have seen in the fall that was sort of previously agreed upon. And basically what they're going to do is they're going to kind of, that map has all 21 districts, right? And what they're going to do is they're going to kind of combine those districts, pair them up for this upcoming election. So there's only going to be 10 districts in when we vote in November, and then they're going to split apart again come 2026. A big debate about that map was, you know, it's sort of a tough proposition because the voting population of Chicago, the population of Chicago at large, doesn't actually look like CPS's population.
Yep.
The kids who are actually enrolled in CPS schools. CPS's population has more Latino kids, has more Black kids than the population of Chicago as a whole. What they kind of landed on was, in terms of what like kinda all 21 districts look like, is 7 majority Black districts, 6 majority Latino districts, 5 majority white districts, and then 2 districts where there's no majority. So this is sort of what voters will be looking at come November when it's time to create this partially elected school board.
Yeah. Woo! You did a great job there, Simone. That was a lot of moving parts. We got through it. I think some of the questions I have remaining can't really even be answered in this plan. For example, if you are somebody who is interested in the school board, do you simply put your name in the hat? Do you wait until the end and then go through whatever process it is to get on the mayor's short list to be recommended? Or do you just, you know, just sort of put your eggs in the running basket and try to get on via the people? But then also for the people who are currently on the school board, is the mayor likely to grandfather them into the next one as appointees? Are they likely to have to run now? I'm still a little bit confused on maybe the decision-making process that a person must go into, like if they're going to decide to run for the school board and what that looks like if they lose. Are they still eligible to be appointed? Like that's the question I still have, because I'd also wonder, like, did you have connections to the mayor and you just sort of set out the race and knowing you would be appointed? And if you lose a race and then get appointed, I'm like, well, did the people not want you? But the mayor, I don't know. It's just a lot of questions around how, like,
it's the politics around the politics around sort of how the school board will work and kind of what is that going to look like in Chicago when for so long we haven't had an elected school board. I think it's going to be really interesting. The politics are going to shake out the way they're going to shake out. We're going to see what happens. What I'm really curious about, on a very different note, is there are a lot of questions that because Chicago is moving to an elected school board, it also changes kind of the way finances are managed between the city and the school. So because the school board is under mayoral control, you know, the city sort of pays for stuff just automatically that I guess might be a slightly different way of approach being approached when it's under a school board. There was a report that came out in 2022 that kind of detailed some of the costs that might come to the school district as a result of moving to an elected school board. That kind of stuff I'm going to be really interested in, of like, does this fundamentally change the way that schools are sort of governed and managed in any significant way? Or are we going to see, as you point out, sort of the same influencers, the same power brokers, you know, exerting their influence in just a slightly different format? I don't know. And I'll be curious to see.
Now, a reminder to folks, the school board vote will come down in November, but obviously we still got the March primary, and we've got several congressional primary races happening in Illinois. But this week in our election corner, we want to focus in on one race that could get very interesting, and that's the 7th Congressional District. The newest drawing of the 7th covers a wide area. It includes parts of the South Side, like West Englewood, Armour Square. I think it goes down to Marquette Park. It covers parts of the Loop running up 9094, and then sort of jet out towards the western suburbs along 290 all the way out to like Hinsdale. And for the last 20 plus years, almost 30 years, the congressman for that district has been Danny Davis. But he is facing some really motivated challengers. Can you give us the lay of the land here, Simone? Because this is one of those races that we have covered before, and Davis ended up winning carrying those major endorsements. But he did have a really stiff challenge during his last race against, again, challenger Keena Collins.
Yeah. So here's kind of what the makeup of this race looks like. We've got incumbent Danny Davis, obviously, as you mentioned, in office for a very long time, a known quantity, known name here in Chicago and in Congress.
I have seen him in these streets multiple times.
Yes. Was part of the civil rights movement in the 60s. He also served as alderman briefly and then has been in Congress since the 90s. He is facing four challengers in the Democratic primary. He is facing a challenge from Keena Collins, who you alluded to. Keena Collins is a challenger from the left, a progressive challenger who has This will be her third time running against Davis in this district. Mm-hmm. She ran in 2020 and, I think got something like 14% of the vote, made a showing, but it wasn't super impressive. But then in 2022, ended up with 46% of the vote.
46.
Really, really gave Davis a really close run in 2022. She is going for it again. Has some endorsements from several progressive aldermen and other elected officials, and thinks she can make another go of it. Another challenger, another big name that people might recognize is City of Chicago Treasurer Melissa Conyers Irvin, who. She's certainly one of the more well-funded challengers and has backing from endorsements from several big institutions as well, and has sort of tried to stake her claim as the challenger to Congressman Davis. So, she initially said that she was going to run if Davis chose to retire, which Davis had sort of said that he was maybe thinking about. Davis said, no, I'm going to run again. And Conyers Irvin said, well, I'm still going to run anyway. And then we also have a couple of other candidates who are challenging Davis. Nikhil Bhatia, who is an educator and a former principal, and Corey Marshall, who is a former deputy director in J.B. Pritzker's administration. But I think the names that people will probably most recognize are Keena Collins and Melissa Conyers Irvin.
Yeah, I mean, and speaking of how well-funded Conyers Irvin is, she's raised, according to the FEC filings, $620,000 for her campaign, which is more than the incumbent, who may, think he doesn't need to raise as much money. He has these big name endorsements like the governor. But Keena Collins, who people listening might be connecting with that Strokes concert that happened recently, because that was a campaign benefit. And folks are saying she might have raised nearly $200,000 to $300,000 after expenses, which, obviously that's another subject. I think what people really want to know is, how different do these candidates seem in terms of the positions that they're running on? While Collins is a little bit further left, it feels like both Melissa and Keena have really just kind of harped on Danny Davis's age, that he should have been spending these last few terms sort of recognizing that the growing district and that changing map last year meant that it might be time for a new representative. And Davis, on the other hand, has really pushed back against that, has really said that, he never gave Conyers Irvin the go to sort of run, that he was stepping down, that he came out and said he doesn't see Collins in these streets when there's not an election going on, and that he is still very sharp mentally and physically and ready to continue to serve the expanding district. But their politics between the three of them, they're not very, they're not radically different.
Not so much, no. And I think you're right. I think a lot of this kind of comes down to, what is the vision for this district and kind of how are voters going to kind of enact that vision?
There's a vast wealth and racial gap across this district. Some of the richest.
That's the other thing. The district is so diverse.
Some of the most wealthy and some of the poorest and most under-resourced communities across the Chicagoland area are inside of the seven. That's a wide variety of people to serve.
Absolutely. And the question is, often when you have a crowded primary like this with a candidate who's been in office forever, it tends to favor the incumbent because you have these other folks who are splitting the vote.
Challengers squabble it out.
You know what I mean? Davis has said, with regards to his age, Davis has said that seniority in Congress is a plus, that you need it in order to get stuff done. But I think there is this question that is happening across the country right now, across positions, about just how true that really is. And is there really a desire for new blood to kind of come in. Another thing that's worth talking about is Melissa Conyers-Irvin as the city treasurer has also been dogged by some ethics issues. The inspector general found that she violated the city's ethics ordinance after she fired two city employees because they had complained that she was using city resources for a prayer service, basically that she had sort of directed them to do stuff that she shouldn't have been directing them to do. Conyers-Irvin has sort of repeatedly said that the inspector general's allegations, that report has misrepresented what was going on, that, you know, that it wasn't happening there. But I do think those are some headlines that have certainly dogged her campaign and something that, you know, challengers like Collins are certainly gonna point to.
We will drop links in the show notes for you to learn as much as there possibly is available on all of the five Democratic candidates. Today's conversation, we largely focus on those three front runners. But again, check our show notes to learn more. Before we get up out of here, that summer festival season is starting to peek its head around the corner just a little bit. Pitchfork announces their lineup tomorrow. The Ravinia Festival announces Thursday. And Lollapalooza, Chicago's largest music festival of the summer, announces next Tuesday. Now, we try to save this spot of them Tuesday chats maybe to create some tension between the two people here, right? What's something we disagree on? But Simone, this gets hard week after week after week because largely you and I, we might take different routes to the same conclusions, but we agree on a lot of things. And this, I feel like, is one of them, that me and you are not huge on music festivals. I don't think we are the biggest haters of music festivals in Chicago, right? We're not just killing them all, but it's not something that when we get to this time of the year, we are planning around, that we're budgeting around. And so I thought a really interesting question would be, who would need to be playing at Lollapalooza, either headlining a couple of people? Who would need to be playing for you to consider either purchasing tickets or sending a few emails to see how you, as executive producer of CityCast Chicago, can sort of get in when one of them passes?
I would actually have to work to get in. So this is such a hard question for me because I listen to so much like sad indie music. That I really do. That doesn't play well at a massive festival in in Grant Park. You know what I'm saying? Like when it's like 90 degrees and 80% humidity and like being in the throng of 400,000 people. But I think for me, if we're talking about artists, if somebody like, say, Beyonce wanted to recreate that Coachella moment here, I'd consider it. Yeah.
You'd be there.
Yeah. Like that was so iconic. And I missed her when she was at Soldier Field. So like, you know, if she wanted to come back and do an outdoor festival, Grant Park, do I think that's likely? No, I'm pretty sure that's entirely impossible. But like, that's kind of what would have to happen, I think. That's the level we're talking about here, I think.
No, when you said Beyonce earlier, I immediately was like, if Beyonce, Jay-Z, and Solange pulled up and did sort of a theatrical reenactment of the elevator saga, cut to completely new and original music, I'd be in there. But if I thought through a few actual ideas of things that I would like to see live and probably wouldn't happen outside of maybe like one of these special events, I always wanted to see the Jay-Z Linkin Park Collision Course live.
Ooh, okay. That could be a great little like revival thing to get people to a festival, to get us slightly older folks.
Right.
To the
that
festival.
Was one I do one that I was like a Kendrick, Drake, J. Cole sort of three-way battle, all three of them. And they could have either put the differences behind them and be doing something collaborative, or it could be inherently competitive. I'd pay to see that live. I don't know if at Lolla.
But you want to see some intermixing of.
I need multiple. The only solo act that I would probably. No, I had one more intermixing. If we did a history of the Dungeon family, so I'm talking like CeeLo, Outkast, now Future, and just did like a sort of cross-generational Dungeon family. But there's one artist I'm paying, Lollapalooza, I'm paying full price, and that's Achilles. That's Achilles. Chicago's own. Achilles.
A.K.A. your brother.
A.K.A. my brother. A.K.A. in my opinion, the goat spitter of Chicago's music scene right now. And that's not just him being my bro. Because him being my bro, I've been watching him rap since he was like 10. And so I remember when it was ass. When it was real bad. And right now, it's all time great. He played a song for me over the weekend, Simone. I was sitting there like, bro, where these bars come from? Like, where is this? What is happening right now? My mind was blown. And so Achilles is a rapper who I'd actually pay to see. But there are a few mix and mingle shows that, you know, I might go out for.
See, so what I love about what you're pitching here is you're really kind of trying to shift the format of the traditional music festival, which I'm here for, because I think that's the issue. Yes.
I want a Super Bowl halftime performance, kind of.
Yeah, I think that's the issue you and I have with music festivals. It's not who's playing. Like, there's lots of people who play at music festivals who I might see, but it's the format that I'm not crazy about, of being outside and, you know, everybody
and,
so close
and you
to
compete
me.
At one time. They're on opposite sides of the festival
you
grounds.
Gotta,
like, headliners playing at the same time. It's real difficult to negotiate.
Get from point A to point B. And the bathroom situation. I would you know what I'm saying? But if we wanted to do something like, so you wrote down this idea and I think it's great. Is to turn the entire experience, the 4-day festival, into a musical. If it were like a participatory, like musical experience.
That was one idea that you kind of blew up and expanded to everything.
I'm into it. I'm super into it. I think we should change the whole format of the concept. Lollapalooza is just a citywide participatory musical where artists are playing secret shows at different parts and you go and see, and it's just like a big, you know, interactive theater experience. That's what I want. That's that to me. Also, I feel like that's very Chicago. I don't know. Maybe not.
Nah, I like that. I like that. One group that I hope actually is on the lineup, because I never get to see them because they largely play overseas, is Salt, which is like a collective of like Cleo Soul and Lil Sims and a couple of other musicians. They typically play like secret shows in like London and Paris and are almost always never touring in the Americas. So if I looked at one of these lineups next week and saw Salt on there.
Okay, here's a question for you, Jacoby. If the, let's say the lineup comes out next week, a week from today, comes out. Mm-hmm. And like there are a couple blocks where it's like secret show. It's not TBD. They've got it booked, but it says something like secret.
I don't like secrets. I don't like surprises.
You don't like it. So that would make you less likely. Less likely.
Because if I show up somewhere and the performance is ass, I'm terribly mad at myself. Because I'm like, why did you believe in that? Why did you put hope
but
in
it? But what if it ends up being, one of these, the collabs that you, would you feel FOMO?
Because where's a secret show happening where Linkin Park and Jay-Z gonna show up? Because they is not coming to Sub T.
No.
They not gonna be at Shubas. No, and so no. A secret show at Soldier Field is hardly a secret.
at Grand Park. I'm positing theoreticals here.
Nah. If I found out, I'd be one of those people trying to get in. Yeah. Trying to get in on the ground. I'd be trying.
You'd be in there. Okay. Good to know.
But yeah, this was a hard one to answer, but if you all have your perfect summer festival lineups, Summertime Shy would not be complete without you seeing these musical acts. Let us know. 773-780-0246. Leave your name, your neighborhood, and your perfect summer music festival lineup. As always, I appreciate our executive producer, Simone Alisea, for making time.
Hey, thanks, Jacoby.
Before I let you go, stay tapped in to all CityCast has to offer by bookmarking our website, chicago.citycast.fm. While you're there, check out the neighborhood guides, best of list, and subscribe to our daily newsletter, Hey Chicago, to get the latest headlines and events in your inbox every morning, Monday through Friday. Of course, I got some good news for you. La Femme Dance Festival is a 3-day celebration of Black women in dance and starts this Thursday. This year's festival features world-renowned choreographers from Chicago, NYC, New Orleans, and Kenya. You can check the show notes for more information and tickets. As always, we appreciate you for listening, reading, going to membership.citycast.fm and becoming a member, and of course, being back here bright and early tomorrow, you know, bringing some friends and family along with you. I know if you put us on all your friends and family at this point, get some new friends, find some new cousins. I don't know what to tell you. Peace. Before we get up out of here, I need to switch back to the document because I've been in a WBEZ article.